Oh, I guess we should like.
Do I have to say who I am?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Laurie Moore.
Hi, I am Carmi Sessler, and welcome back to the Mumpsters podcast.
Hello!
I'm Carmi.
I'm Laurie.
Welcome to Mumpsters!
Mumpster!
So I had people coming over to the house yesterday. I was having the board for the softball booster club.
I was going to say, why am I not invited?
Yeah, okay. No, it wasn't like a party. So if you hear the dogs in the background, there are three dogs with us, okay? So someone's bound to do something.
The child has finally fallen asleep, so now the dogs.
So the dogs will now bark. So you know how that is when you have people coming over. It's the, oh my God, we have to straighten the house. So we were doing that, and I texted Maria, and said to her, will you please come and take the stuff that was on the stairs upstairs? So she was doing that, and she didn't really want to be doing it. She was throwing stuff up the steps to get it up the stairs. She wasn't carrying them. And my husband said something to her, which totally pissed her off. And then Robbie said something sarcastic to her, and she threw a book at him.
Ooh!
Like a big, heavy book. Nailed him right
Damn.
In the back. Yeah. And he's going, ow, ow. I missed it. I didn't see her throw the book.
Marie arm on her throwing the
She's a catcher. Like, seriously? Like, she could throw from home plate to second base on her knees. All right? They were within 6 feet of one another. And she threw a book at him. So my reaction was, what did you say? I looked at Robbie. I'm like, well, what did you say? What did you say?
How did you provoke this?
And he did. And I'm like, well, then you deserve it. I couldn't even yell at her. So, yeah. So that's how my night was last night. So then we had to walk her off the cliff. You know. Ugh.
I find, or at least I've been advised, because I don't have this experience yet, but it's supposed to be better to just step away from sibling infighting and let them take care of it themselves.
Yeah, no, you'll see. No. Nope. No. Sometimes you just have to get involved. You know. Sometimes you just do. Because it's stupidness. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they're fighting over.
Yeah, I mean, they're teenagers now, so.
Yeah. Whatever. He deserved it. She shouldn't have thrown it.
Yeah, Rob.
But, you know, it is what it is. So my daughter and I were talking because she comes home from school and I always ask her, we have these conversations. So what happened to you at school today? How were things at school today? And she was telling me about an incident that happened at school with somebody she knows. And the person is struggling as to whether or not she is gay.
Interesting.
And I have always said to my children from the time they came out of me, I don't care who you love as long as they love you back. Okay. Which is the truth.
That is the opposite rhetoric of what was happening in my household. But go ahead.
So I said this and I'm trying to explain to my daughter, and she's like, well, this girl and, you know, and I don't know what to do. And she's struggling. And the last time, you know, the parents didn't talk to her for like weeks, you know, because they thought she had a girlfriend or whatever.
Oh my goodness.
And it was just like insanity. So
that makes me cringe.
I say to my daughter, I could kind of understand where the parents come from.
Oh, Lord.
Wait, are you ready? I said, because.
Did you get a book thrown in?
No. I got the WTF stare, but hold on. I said, because. Before you have children, you have expectations for your children, right? And you, like, from their parents, like these other parents, their perspective, I said, and you know, maybe they're struggling now because they expected her to get married and have children and whatever. I said, unlike me, I said, I had no expectations for you guys. And she was like, geez, thanks.
So at least from my perspective, my goal and the expectation for me was don't die and don't get pregnant before you're 20. And then
that was your expectation for you.
That's what I had to achieve to overcome
the way
the
you drove. I was more worried about you dying than I was you getting pregnant.
Yeah. So my mom put me on birth control immediately, which was a great decision. Not only because it protected me, but also because I had absolutely terrible periods. Yes.
So here I'm trying to explain to my daughter that some parents can't let go of their expectations. You know what I mean? Like, you have a child, they're a girl. What do you expect from her? You expect her to grow up, to get married, to have children, to have a, you know what I mean? Like, all of these things, not taking their identity and their authenticity into consideration whatsoever. That guys, your child may not grow up to be that person.
I think it's problematic to see your children as an extension of yourself.
Well, yeah.
You got to deal with that as a parent. And that's a lot of work to be able to do that and separate yourself and say, all right, well, this isn't just like an arm or a branch of my tree.
Right.
This is a completely different tree and has completely different
fruit.
Right,
it needs different kind of nourishment in order to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it, which is different than the nourishment that we needed to grow. Mm-hmm. But to provide that to them. And my kids don't understand. My daughter was having such a difficult time understanding how those parents can't accept their child. Like, she's like, I never had to come home to that, ever. Like, it was just so far-fetched for her. Like, her brain could not process it. We experienced
that. I mean, not so much me. So, like, I'm a bisexual woman in a heterosexual marriage, which makes me a front-facing heterosexual, essentially.
Did your husband know this?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Everybody knows. I love women. But I don't know. Growing up, I was not allowed to... See, what happened is we grew up in this really Christian household, and my family was like openly, especially my nuclear family, was openly hostile toward the LGBT community. Like, my father would see something on TV and be like, that's f***y. So for me, having thoughts about women at all was very scary. So I just tried to block all of that stuff out. I do feel like I would have had a different experience if I was growing up in today's culture. Maybe not, but like I don't remember having like Chapel Rowan and Billie Eilish. Right. I mean, we didn't have anyone out there singing I'm gonna eat that girl for lunch. Like, we didn't have any of that, and I feel like that would have broken down a lot of walls for me because it would have normalized it a little bit more. And I wish I had explored that side of my sexuality a little bit more before but I didn't know, you know, like you try to hide it from yourself because it's easier
to go with the norm.
It's easier to be straight when you're bisexual and you have a choice. Joe, my brother, didn't have that option, and because he's gay, and my father is not the most accepting of that, certainly not at the time. He wasn't
right.
And so there was a ton of collision there, whereas I was able to kind of just like turn it off and take a different path because I just married a person because I loved a person.
Right.
You know, if Joe could have done that, I'm sure he would have, but he, you know, you can't help who you love. And so that
exactly
caused, first of all, I think it caused a ton of inner turmoil with my brother. I mean, for like years and years, we kept it a secret because we were afraid of what my father was going to do. Joe didn't have anywhere to go. And, you know, when my father did finally find out, he wasn't like awful about it, but also he was like, you know, I would have preferred you the other way, but I still love you. So, I mean, that's not like the funnest thing to hear.
I know.
So, yeah, I think kids growing up in these more hostile households that aren't as open, they bury a lot in themselves. And that oftentimes comes out as homophobia.
Right.
And I think you even see that when they become parents themselves, is like, you know, you never dealt with this internal struggle that you had, and now you're passing it along and just expecting, you know, your kid's going to bury it too. Well, you know, in modern times, thankfully, kids are able to express themselves differently. Yeah. Yes. And it's not as dangerous, I would like to think. Although, I mean, the statistics around transphobic homicide is shocking and terrible. I think those, especially trans women, are very much in danger every day of their lives.
Right.
But like Joe walking down the street with his boyfriend,
a little more acceptable than
Yes. Yes. Like, yeah. You know, and he also knows where to be walking around with his boyfriend.
Well, sure, because there are some places still in our country, in our city, in our state, you know, where you can't be, you don't want to be obvious because you would attract attention, unwanted attention to
and
yourself.
And because people can be mean and violent and angry about it. And you just, you know, especially like my brother is not the kind of person that likes to draw attention to himself in the first place.
Right.
So yeah, it's especially traumatizing for kids when that meanness is happening within your own home. Well, and you have to go find a community somewhere.
So my children explained it to me this way, because I was saying, well, maybe these parents, you know, they're struggling because the child isn't meeting the expectations. You know what I mean? Of what the parent expected them to be like. Oh, my child's going to grow up and they're going to get married and a church and do, you know what I mean? Like, however, my kids are like, no, those parents are homophobic. There's a difference between parents who are trying to accept their child. Okay. That, okay, I may not understand this. And yes, it makes me sad that they're not going to have what I would think of as being a
Not even sad, but uncomfortable. You're right, just not,
like you're,
you know,
just like they're trying.
You're not
to get
familiar
over
with
it.
That. You don't even realize, you know, like we're going to a wedding of two men.
Yeah.
In November, like it's not like your child can't have a normal life. It's just
But
you know,
you as
it's going to be a different path.
Imagine not speaking to your child because of their sexual orientation.
I can't imagine that, but that has. You know, I've seen that unfold.
I know, but how do you explain that to your kid who never grew up in a household where that was ever an issue? Like, they cannot, like, it's difficult for them to wrap their head around that. And I, as a parent, you know, as a parent, like, I don't know.
I don't think we have to justify other people's homophobia. It's like...
Yeah, but that is affecting my child because it is affecting her friend. You know what I mean? Like,
I think the best thing you can do as a parent there is be the safe space.
Oh, always. My kids know that. I can't tell you how many children that my daughter knows that they're like, Mom, so-and-so thinks they may be pregnant. Bring them over. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I'm the mom. Let them in the house. So-and-so's going to tell their parents that they're gay tonight. If they need us to pick them up, we'll pick them up. You know what I mean? Like, I'm that parent. I'm the one who's like, look, if you need a safe place, I'm the safe house.
And you have to understand, like, from the perspective of a child, what's up, Fuzz? That is coming out to a parent and is uncomfortable about what that reaction is going to be. There's so much buildup.
Does he have to go out?
I don't know, maybe. You want to let him out, Rob? There's so much anticipation and anxious anticipation of what that moment is going to be. And then to have sort of your worst fears
like put in front
fold
of your...
when
know.
Your parent doesn't accept who you really are and you can't change who you really are. I think that's obviously a really tough transition in a lot of relationships.
So take the expectations in a different way. So your father was, I'll use this as a sports analogy because it's the only easiest way for me to do it. Your father was quarterback of the football team. Your grandfather was quarterback of the football team. They expect you to be quarterback of the football team. And you want to do musical theater or you want to do, you know, baseball or you want to do, you know what I mean? Hockey or something. And they just like parental expectations. How many times I see kids struggle even in sports because their parents are throwing down their throat
that they
need to be something that the child doesn't want them to be. A drink. That was the dying. Pregnancy sip.
What was I going to say? Oh, Joe had that experience, like, outside of the LGBT context. Excuse me. We're winemakers. My father was the fourth generation, and our generation is the fifth generation of winemakers since they came over from Italy. So everyone made wine my father's whole life. And I was very interested in making wine, for the record. I was big part of it. I really enjoyed that. Also would have been cool with hunting culture that I never got invited to, but I digress. My father really, really tried to get him into winemaking. And I remember when he was little, like, I don't know, he might not have even been 10 yet, but he was just bawling his eyes out because he didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
And it was such a big deal for my father. And, like, you gotta...
Okay.
You just gotta let kids be. You gotta know when to
walk away. Yeah.
You know, if they're not shooting heroin, then it's a win. You know, there's worse things than having different hobbies or different love interests than your parents.
I know.
Or different religions, which is a whole...
That on its own is a whole other... Yeah.
The expectation that you're going to follow the religion of your parents and that your children are going to follow the religion of your parents is also heavy. And, you know, I give parents a lot of credit when they can stand up. Like, we had... So my adopted father, Tom, his brother had a child.
Right.
And it was right when my grandfather was passing away.
Uh-huh.
And his deathbed wish was, you have to get this child baptized. And it was this crazy drama in the whole family because the parents didn't want to get the child baptized.
I never heard this story, but all right.
My God. And the hate that was thrown at the child's mother and the judgment, like, why? How could you possibly not give this man his dying wish? But, like, at the end of the day, that's their choice.
Yeah.
And you got to give them the freedom to bring their child up the way they want. And I always felt that was really unfair to put that pressure on them. And I had a lot of respect for the mom in the situation, my aunt, through marriage, because she really stood her ground. I mean, the Gubbiatis are tough. Like, they will come for you, and we're just very aggressive advocates in our family on both sides. What is the Star Wars phrase? Like, aggressive persuasion?
I don't know.
The aggressive negotiations? That's my family. So, I mean, good for her for being able to stand up and say, you know, I'm not going to just capitulate to what people want, because I don't think that's fair for her. And then, you know, in the same vein, I thought it was really liberating, and it was a good inspiration for me in my, you know, child rearing of Lincoln, that I was like, this is what's the right decision for me. I'm sure Graham is still frazzled about it. There's a part of me that thinks that my mother-in-law definitely snuck him to get Christianized, to get baptized. I swear.
She was afraid for his soul.
She must have taken him to the church. But for the most part, people were very respectful. And I think the bigger fear I have is Catholic schools, where I'm just like, I'm so uncomfortable bringing him into an environment where church leaders and priests are in control of the situation, and it makes me more validated and stronger in standing for that position and saying, no, we're going to go to this other school, because I've seen other people fight the Christian, well, I don't even know how to, there's just an expectation.
Yes.
Like, the expectation that you're going to carry on this religion and you're going to carry on
the traditions. When Uncle Dave and I were getting married, the priest talks to you before you get married. And he said
pre-cana, right? Is that pre-cana, what they call it?
Yeah, but whatever. We did that. But actually, we did it in Allentown. So we did that. And then the priest talked to us afterwards, and he's like, fill him with a cigarette. Right? So he's smoking his down, all the way down to the, you know, butt, smoking and just dragging the cigarette.
Priest.
I will tell you later.
Because you got married at Immaculate, right?
Yeah, I had everything in Immaculate.
I know who that
Baptized.
Is.
Baptized.
I know who that is. Go ahead.
No, different one.
Not him.
No.
No, I know.
No. Pre.
I know.
No.
I know who they were.
So anyway, he said to David, and you're going to raise your child Catholic. And I'm like, silence. right? Because Uncle Dave, he's what, Methodist something? I don't know what he was. United Church of Christ. I don't even know if that's, I don't know what he is. So anyway.
Some Christian.
He's a good person is what he really is. So his religion didn't matter. However, this priest is asking us, and I'm silent. And Dave's looking at me, and I'm like, well, here's me the night before, right? We're getting ready to go to the rehearsal party, and I go, well, I don't know that.
Would you?
I'm like, I can't after everything stand
you
here.
Know.
I can't stand here, I know, and say I'm going to raise my kids Catholic. He goes, well, could you at least raise them Christian? I'll consider it. I'm like, great, I have this whole thing paid for it. And he's going to go, no.
I feel like we had enough dirt on the church that you know. Could have made them. We could have twisted their arm on that one.
We could have found somebody else to marry us.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, I wanted to give them that freedom, you know.
But that's another moment where you have that anticipatory anxiety of telling someone, you know, you're not quite going to meet the expectation.
I mean, he was the one who was going to marry us. I mean, I could have lied. I should, but like, how do you lie to a priest? You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure everybody else does. Never mind confession. So I told the truth, and that was.
And they still let you get married.
They still let us get married. Yeah, though we couldn't have a full service because Uncle Dave wasn't a full ceremony.
Really? That's so dumb.
We couldn't do communion because he's not wasn't Catholic. I know. So all the other Catholics had to suffer. They couldn't
I remember
get communion.
For one. One wedding, there was a Morganti wedding we went to, and they were like, okay, well, if you're a person that gets communion, come and get communion, and if not, just, you know, sit there.
Sit there and sit be tight. Excluded. We'll get
sit
to
tight.
You. Yeah.
You'll be good. But, yeah, they really, they want you to feel estranged when you're not following the exact traditions. And, you know, there is a feeling of loss when you walk away from that many years of tradition. Like, I miss the music. I miss the community. I miss so much about what...
Some of the rituals. There was the rituals I miss.
There were real benefits to being in a church community.
Yes.
However, I came to the point where I decided that that was outweighed by, like, the very real negatives. I mean, and not even personally, but it's just, you know, I remember in law school... it was right after the Obergefell decision came out, the Supreme Court decision that that said gay marriage is legal and you can't make it illegal. We have a right to get married to whomever we want, regardless of their genitals. So that decision had just come out, and I was at the time still going to church every Sunday. I was a church. I mean, I was I was a church person. I cantered at church. It was a big deal for me. So I went with Patrick to church, and the priest, oh my gosh, he gave this scathing homily about how we don't understand the effects of gay marriage and bringing children into this experimental household. I got up and I walked right out, and I was like, I mean, I honestly, that's I think when I was done, because I just don't think kids should be brought up in that kind of a community. And also, I think gay parents are awesome. Like,
no, it's not about what it's about who loves you. You could have parents that aren't gay and don't love you.
Exactly.
That are non-accepting.
You have all these children that are in
parental expectations.
That are in foster care, that need to be adopted, that need love. They just want love. And they are not discriminating. But the churches and the organizations that are in charge of these agencies sometimes are discriminating and don't feel that you're worthy of that family status. And that's ridiculous to me. I mean, that's awful. But that also, you see that reflected in individual households. You know, the church sets the standard, and then that expectation carries down to, you know, your dad wanting you to be a toxic masculine jerk. That's, you know, that's the culture that they grew up in and that they appreciate.
But there's everything is about hate, and I don't get it.
Yeah, it's just, it's so removed from the actual teachings of Jesus. Like, if you're a real Christian, like, because well, we no, were that's really
fear
in too. It.
Everything is based in fear. Mm-hmm. Then there's the fear of everything. Like, that's a whole different.
A lot of these people have never read scripture. They've never read the Bible. They're not really paying attention.
You don't read the Bible when you're Catholic.
No, but they go through the gospel and the, you know, you read passages.
What they want you to read.
But there's no passages that say, screw the LGBT community. Like, I mean, there's such a disconnect between what the scripture actually says and what Jesus is telling us, and then what people on the ground in the church are doing as activists, which is the complete opposite in many ways of what Jesus would have done if he was here, because he was accepting of everyone. And I think sometimes in the... you know, in the haze of the tradition and the glory, we lose sight of
your mother.
Jesus
is pregnant and she is not married, right? Where's the church in all of this? No, wait, but seriously, they are against abortion, right? So here's a mom who
20 years old,
support,
by the way.
Who needs support.
Living
right?
with her parents.
Right. I mean, she's fortunate that she has us. There's some kids that just get kicked out and that's it. But again, the parents can't wrap their head around, you know, they expected you to be married. They expect you to get, you know, whatever. So, but the church was, I didn't see them like putting out any cash going, here, honey, we'll help you out.
No, I mean, she very much did it on her own, and I give her credit for that. Of course, with, like, the village of my grandmother and all aunts that helped, but she went out there and just, like, grinded through a horrible situation that she might not even have been in if she didn't grow up in such a religious community. I mean...
Well, yes, that's very... There are so many... There were a lot of circumstances that were...
You know, like it or not, whether or not she considers it a choice, she made that choice. And I respect her for that choice. I think a lot of people respect her for that choice. I think she'd be respected if she made a different choice and, you know, chose to move forward with her career and
right
and her relationship, which, you know, I struggle with because you can say that my birth didn't have any effect on my biological father's life, but the truth is that if I didn't exist at all, they might have still been together that night when he died. He might have never been at that bar in the first place. So I feel like I came in like a freight train to these people's lives and disrupted everything. And my mother just survived better.
That is a very interesting take on it.
Yeah, and I think almost no one has that perspective unless you're growing up as, you know, an unwanted pregnancy, which is what I was. Right, like, you don't understand what it's like to be an unwanted pregnancy.
I don't,
you not are
at
one.
All. Not at all.
And especially, like, okay, there's a difference between, like, oh, we had, like, an oopsie and we had Maria, but... You know, we were in our formed household and we're together.
Yeah, and we knew. Like,
yeah.
We were like, yeah.
I mean, like, when your 19-year-old's mother has a kid in her parents' house while she's still in school and the father's not present at all and then dies. Like, I mean, that's inherently traumatic. And we all handled it beautifully. We all were so supportive and made sure that my mother and I...
Right.
Could have a great life. And I think she endeavored and fought so hard to give me normalcy. But there's, you know, there's an expectation that you can have normalcy. And there was never anything normal about how I came into the world.
That's very true.
And it kind of,
nothing
it
normal
like,
about.
It discredits all of the strength that it took for her to overcome that situation when you just say, you know, well, that's, you know, it wasn't a decision. It was a choice. You made that choice. You fought. You walked through college campus with the stigma of a pregnant belly in the 90s. Right. Like, give yourself credit for what you did and what you chose.
Yeah, she had you on in the beginning of January. And then went back to school immediately when school began.
Yeah, she had for finals that semester in her last 5 weeks of pregnancy. Yes. And they told her that they told her at the OB-GYN that they were going to induce her early so that she can go to her finals. And they obviously didn't do that. That was a lie. And then at school, they didn't move around any of her finals because she was pregnant. They didn't give her any accommodations.
Well, again, it was a Catholic college.
So it's a Catholic college that wants you to have the baby. They should accommodate the baby. But, yeah, I mean, I think the fact that the circumstances were so imperfect, it makes it that much more amazing that we all came out of it the way we did. And it speaks to our strength and resilience and our survival skills. And when we say I like to recognize that. I think in trying to tamp down or erase the inherent trauma of mm-hmm. being an unwanted child, you also erase all of the good. Like, I mean, I watched my mother beat all the odds, and then I beat all the odds.
Yeah,
you know, like, we were never statistics, and that's it was very much a choice. It wasn't an accident. It was all of us working together.
Right, that's very true. We had a good community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but yeah, to say it was just, you know, it was destiny, or it was never a thought, never a second thought. Well, it was huge. It was a huge deal. It was like a meteor came.
Well, and I agree with you. Family. I'll agree with you that you disrupted our family, because I myself was not on a good path at all. I was on an extremely destructive path, and you came along, and I was like, I better get my act together. I have a niece. Like, I can't behave this way, and completely changed my life.
Yeah, I mean, I changed, and like, I mean, I literally changed the trajectory of people's lives.
Yes,
and in
absolutely
some cases like yours, that turned out really well and it was a benefit. And yes, in some cases like my biological father's, like, no, that wasn't really good for him.
Yeah, but that's,
he was on
again,
his own.
It comes down to the parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. That was,
and his, your parental expectations.
'Cause he was a kid too. He didn't know what he was doing either.
I know. But the parental expectations.
Mm-hmm.
His mother
expected him to go to school, which is weird because it's the opposite of what the expectation would have been in our household. Like, if she was a man and she got somebody pregnant at 19 years old, her parents would have been like, you are helping. Like, yeah, you're not abandoning this baby.
Yeah.
You're going to go, and if she's going to have the baby, you're going to be part of that.
Right.
You don't walk away. That was just not the advice that my 20-year-old father, biological father, was given.
Right.
And, like, to this day, his mother has never contacted me, which is so weird. Because I've talked to everybody else in the family. I've met his side of the family. Generally speaking, they're pretty cool. But, yeah, like, she never got past that.
Do you think maybe that was a benefit to you?
I don't know. For a long time, it bothered me. Like, why wouldn't you want to know your son's child?
Fear, embarrassment.
But also, like, there's got to be, I met other members of the family, and they're like, wow, you look like him. Like, you know, there's got to be some of his essence that comes through me.
Right.
And I would have loved to, like, have her see that and, like, have her see her son in me. And she just literally won't acknowledge that I exist at all. I tried, after law school, I, like, hunted her down and found her on social media. And, of course, she's one of those super religious people that posts about, like, Jesus and how she's so giving and, like, everything's about selflessness. And I'm just like, dude, you don't even acknowledge I exist. And I, like, told her who I was. I was like, just trying to reach out and let her know. And she accepted my friend request, so she was peeping on me, but she never responded. And I got to the point, like, at first I was really hurt by it, and then I, like, was taking it out on all of the biological side of the family, because I was like, this is so awkward. Like, I don't, if she's not going to accept me, where do I fit in here? And then I got to the point where I was like, I don't need this. And I feel like it's so juvenile to unfollow people or whatever on social media, but that was the one time that I was like, we're not going to be friends anymore. You don't get to see my beautiful successes and right. my family and my life and validate whatever decisions you made without actually having contact with me. And so I think that helped me grow a little bit, but yeah, it's weird.
I have no words, because that was such a traumatic time in our life. It was weird.
It's weird having a grandparent that just doesn't acknowledge that you exist. And that's potentially the closest tie I would have had to my father. She could have sat down and
right.
we could have talked about him.
Yeah. Could have told you all the positive things about him.
We didn't even really talk about him much with my mom. It was always very, mm-hmm. It was acknowledged. My mom told me the truth from day one, yeah. which I respect and appreciate a lot. But, we weren't talking about Rick on a daily basis. It was right. kind of like,
wasn't allowed to.
As a kindergartner, I was going to school being like, oh, yeah, my dad is dead. Because, I don't know.
Right.
And the family was just, cringing because they just wanted me to come across as a normal kid that had, a normal family and a normal dad.
Because you had all of us, they thought you were normal. Mm-hmm. They wanted it to be normal.
Mm-hmm. And then she brought Tom in, so it was like, oh, well, you have a father now, so that's, there's no problems here. It just, it was amazing having a father, don't get me wrong. I still have a relationship with my adopted father, and I'm so grateful that he adopted me. But, it didn't undo the trauma. There was still trauma.
Right.
And I think our family, had a really hard time acknowledging that, because they created this perfect, normal life for me. And I was doing well. I did well with it. But, it's not like Rick just disappeared. He was the thing for me. Especially, you're talking to dead people. And, I was constantly, I had a constant dialogue in my head with Rick.
Right.
And I think people got so intimidated by that in our family that, I felt a closeness to this person and an attachment to this person.
Well, that's a fine line, because there's the part of betrayal. Am I betraying my family because I would agree with you that you could have this inner dialogue with your dad?
And it made my adopted father very uncomfortable. So I think there was,
well, that was the whole spiritual part of it.
Not even that. He just didn't like the fact that I was somebody else's kid. He was my father, and that's how we grew up. My brother was my brother. There was no half anything. We were a family. But it was, there was not a lot of space in that beautiful nuclear family we created for my emotions.
Right.
And the fact that, what you're seeing is a perfect family, but what I've experienced is, a lot of this trauma from when I was born, and things are great now, but I still have the trauma and I still have an attachment to my dead father. And yeah, that's weird for people, but it was normal for me. It was more abnormal to be hiding it and not talking about it.
Well, I never hid anything from Uncle Dave about Mike, who was my fiance that died prior to Dave and I getting together. And matter of fact, Mike's parents even came to visit us, and they met my children, and, they met Dave, and even my, even it was, I think it was Marie or Robbie, one of them saw him in the house after he was, they were like, who's this guy? And I'm like, oh, that's mommy's friend, So, but the kids never knew who he was until they were doing a family tree. And they were like, so none of you were married before, were you? And Dave and I were just silent. And I'm like, well, it's not that we weren't married before, but mommy was engaged before. I'll never forget Robbie coming around the corner going, what? It was just, in the house, to look. What? In the room. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But even that, acknowledging that you had that experience.
Always. I always acknowledge it. Shows the maturity.
How much strength you had to survive that experience. That was a traumatic experience, too. You had, you were in your 20s.
Yeah.
And your love of your life at the time gets cancer, like, you know, the type of cancer that you don't recover survive, from. And right. how do you process that as a 20-year-old? You can't. It's, or 20, what were you, 25? I don't.
When he and I met, I was like 27 and he died when I was 30, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's super traumatic. So if you don't talk about the experiences like that you go through, it's almost a disservice to yourself because you're denying all the strength it took for you to persevere through that moment mm-hmm. and survive it. And I think that's true of like a lot of what my mom went through. Like she wants to, and that's true of a lot of people. You want to pretend like your life has been perfect and this very easy road.
I have never pretended my life was perfect, ever. Actually, I have been too honest about how imperfect my life has been. Because other people need to.
Exactly. Because I well, feel that's that other why people we're would here benefit, doing this.
Right, because you know. Other people could benefit from listening, like, hey, you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. You know. But most people, I think, try to make a front-facing facade.
Yeah.
That's a little bit
so
cleaner.
One of the things that I learned from when Mike died is that you could, oh, I think I said this before too, you could love a person and grieve at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I met Dave, well, you know, it wasn't, Mike wasn't even dead a year, and yeah, but you could love a person and grieve at the same time. So here come the doggies. Hi.
Dogs are back.
Hi. Yeah, so we'll see where this goes with our parental expectations.
Well, and then the expectation for you at that point was you weren't waiting long enough to get engaged, right?
Well, no, the first expectation was, why am I still living away? And I didn't move back.
Oh, gosh.
Right? So, no, I'm going to live, right?
I've lived so through that expectation.
I moved in with my gay friends. Right? My gay guy friends.
The BBB guys.
Right. And I lived with them. And then I met Uncle Dave. And we wanted to get engaged. And Grandma said no because it wasn't enough time after Mike died. So, yes, there was an expectation. A fear of what the neighbors would think. But, you know, we'll be married 25 years this year.
Fear of what the neighbors would think, though, I think has such a negative effect on so many families.
Not just ours. Yeah, what will the neighbors say?
What will your kids say? I mean, like, that's, you got to change your perception from, like, what would my grandfather think and what would the neighbors think to, like, what is my kid going to think of me at the end of the day? You know, because you're going to want to have a relationship with your kids. And I think we spend all this time trying to live up to our parents' and grandparents' expectations and spend so little time working to earn the respect of our kids. And we need to flip that a little bit so that we can sometimes learn from our kids how to be a little bit better. And I think children sometimes have a better perspective than
adults
people
do.
That have been stuck in their ways.
Yeah,
for
sure,
so long.
Because they just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I think we've killed this topic.
We have. Okay. Thank you for coming to our podcast.
And if you have any family trauma that you would like to talk about,
we love it.
Please, please connect with us.
Share.
Because we would love to be able to either help you out or be a sounding board or maybe even share your story.
Validate your trauma.
Bye-bye.